You're listening to DVD Talk Radio.
On this DVD Talk Radio show, we speak with John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants, who has just released a CD and DVD for kids entitled Here Come the ABCs. It amazes me. You guys are probably, you know, an entry in the category of hardest working band out there.
I wish we didn't have to work so hard, but, you know, we got to feed the cats.
Talking about Here Come the ABCs, first of all, you know, let me say my three-year-old is a devout fan of the CD and the DVD. And
so excellent.
The thing that I think is incredible about it is that I enjoy it as a parent, which I can say applies only to about 1% of the stuff that he listens to. So, I mean, how did this project come about? And give me a little bit of backstory on the project.
Well, you know, we did this kids' album called No a couple of years ago that was much more successful than we anticipated. And it kind of emboldened us to think that we could do kids' stuff in an ongoing way. And, you know, it's a little bit confusing being a rock band that, you know, continues to rock, also kind of starting a parallel career. And we kind of hope that our audience is up for the idea, like it doesn't, you know, that we aren't accidentally sort of infantilizing the notion of what They Might Be Giants is about. In some ways, I feel like it's almost the ultimate power move into the most supremely adult stance a band can take, because it's like we're actually admitting that there are kids in the world and we're not them. A lot of rock music is really, you know, caught up in some very sort of adolescent notions of cool and things like that. But, you know, I really enjoy writing stuff without having to think about where it's going to land in the culture. And being in a rock band, even a rock band that is only tangentially in the rock culture as They Might Be Giants is, it comes up a lot, you know? I mean, I think people in general tend to think that the songs we write are somehow in response to the world, when really most of what we do is really kind of trying to make something that captures our own imaginations and just makes us kind of hear things in a new way. I guess that's a very elaborate way of saying that we really enjoy the process of doing stuff for kids. It felt surprisingly interesting. At first, I think we just assumed it would be like a limitation or like some kind of, you know, governor over our writing, that we would have to kind of write a song and then pull back some part of it to make it acceptable to parents and kids. But just the opposite has been true. It's been like wonderfully easy and breezy.
Now, have you integrated any of the ABC songs into your regular show for, you know, when you're doing...
There's a bunch, you know, I mean, here, Alphabet of Nations is a song that just immediately fit into the show because it's not that different than a regular They Might Be Giants song. You know, it's got this very absurdist kind of idea, and it's a funny kind of hybrid of music. You know, it's got this sort of, what was the name of that movie about the guy, the runner guy? It's like 20 years ago, they're running on a beach. I never saw the movie.
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, it's got this kind of Chariots of Fire piece of music that also with a kind of a funky beat combined. There's sort of this faux pageantry to a lot of the music to it. And then, of course, there's just a list of nation names in alphabetical order. And that somehow that seems, you know, completely at home in the middle of a regular They Might Be Giants set. It was hardly a stretch. I think our adult fans, you know, embraced it right away. And, you know, other songs like E, It's Everything, they're just kind of crazy songs, and our fans are pretty open to that kind of stuff. So a lot of it works, you know, some of it doesn't, but we don't mind if the two things kind of don't overlap. You know, I think I'm not that worried if parents find the kid stuff too kid-like. You know, we need to make it for the immediate audience that it's for, and that's fine, you know. I really don't want to have to think about little kids listening to our adult record, that's for sure.
Do you think that this is going to be a bridge? I mean, it's, you know, it's not a far...
I think it might define a bridge too far. I mean, most, you know, half of our adult songs are, you know, have like really inappropriate stuff. You know, it's subtle, but it's like, I really wouldn't want to defend it. You know, there's just a lot of like sort of violent stuff and a lot of just really bleak existential stuff in our songs, and I don't know how good that is for kids. I mean, people tell us that they play our adult records for their kids. They find it acceptable, but I don't know.
You guys have been amazingly prolific. How do you keep it fresh and creative and manage to continue to innovate and come up with things that feel as fresh as maybe the things that came out at the beginning of your career?
Well, you know, honestly, it does kind of ebb and flow, and we do have the advantage of time, you know. We don't have to you know, produce stuff every day or even every year sometimes. You know, months go by where we don't write songs, and we've learned enough about ourselves not to force it. We don't really try to write songs on the road anymore, which was always something that I think kind of got to us a little bit, that we couldn't figure out a way to write on the road. But our output is pretty earthbound. I mean, I think if you add it up over the number of years that we've been together and how many songs we've published, and factor in that both John and I write together and apart, it kind of comes out a song every couple of weeks, which isn't so enormous, maybe even less. I'm not sure. I mean, it does look impressive, you know, from a distance, but I think once you kind of do the numbers and realize we've been together for 23 years, it might not be quite as amazing. Honestly, you know, I think we're still ambitious for the quality of what we're capable of in the future. I think in some ways we feel like we're just kind of hitting our stride as really good songwriters. You know, it's not so important how many songs you write in a way. You want to write songs that stand the test of time and, you know, hold up to repeated listening, and that's harder work. I don't know. I feel like, you know, we've written a lot of songs, but I feel like I've got a few great songs still left to be written.
You're doing something kind of interesting that I saw. You're doing a song for the city that you're in. Talk a little bit.
Well, that was actually something we did last summer and fall on a national tour, and it was sort of speaking to the whole thing about not being able to write on the road. We kind of created this device for ourselves to force us to do stuff on tour. We basically wrote a song dedicated to every venue that we were performing at. And by the end of the tour, we had about 32 songs written, and they're all very different from each other and have very different kind of points of view. Some of them are very much, you know, overtly in the style of other established bands. I mean, we did a song for a rock club in Dallas named Trees that we basically did in the style of Yes, which was very, very tricky and it took an extensive, the song is only a minute long, but we probably spent 4 hours straight rehearsing all these little twists and turns, and it's got three-part harmony, and it's a very tight, and, you know, it's just this very strange kind of music, that art rock music from the 70s. I think by the end of it, we all realized how much better the musicians in Yes must really be than we ever suspected, because it was really tough. I can't imagine playing an entire set of music that was that precise. We basically, you know, we just kind of had fun with the idea, and it was an interesting challenge. It was a way to kind of keep things fresh on the road, and the audiences, of course, you know, you come out on stage and you play a song dedicated to the city you're in. It's kind of exciting for them to hear this new piece of music about the club they're standing in. It was really an experiment. I don't think we knew what it would end up being. It was just kind of a random challenge we set out for ourselves.
You guys have always done, you know, very different ways of distributing your music, from mail order to dial a song to, you know, getting your tracks up on MP3. What new way of distributing and doing your music is next for you? I mean, have you looked at podcasting?
Well, I it's funny you mentioned podcasting. I don't quite know how podcasting works in terms of copywritten material, but it's an interesting idea. It seems like it's more like radio or broadcasting than it is suitable for, well, I guess, I don't know if people, do people buy that stuff?
I mean, right now, podcasting is, I mean, you know, DVD Talk Radio is a podcast, and basically all it is any form of audio content that people, you know, could get that just downloads automatically and syncs up with their portable audio device. So you could do interviews like we're doing now, you could do talk radio, or you could do, you know, you could do a dial a song on podcasting, where every day somebody, you know, boots up their computer, syncs their iPod or other MP3 device, and off they go. They've got the They Might Be Giant song of the day.
Wow, that seems like an extraordinary amount of work. I definitely want to sort of investigate how it works. Right now, we're sort of working on an adult sequel to the Here Come the ABCs format. I think you know, having found a way to get back into linking visual stuff to our music with all these flash animations and working with all these flash animators and kind of laptop animators that we did on the Here Come the ABCs project, it was a really interesting project for us, and it kind of added another layer to what we were doing that I think was just satisfying for us as writers, and it just felt like a different kind of project. It reminded me of making videos for, you know, in the early days of MTV. It just seemed like there was unlimited potential to that medium.
Talking about DVDs, I was really impressed by Gigantic, and I'm curious, as when an artist has, you know, their musical history so well encapsulated, you know, what does that do to you? Does that put you into an introspective point kind of going forward, or what was your experience?
Well, you know, we've said this before, but, you know, like, the whole thing about Gigantic is that it came right at this weird moment in our career where we'd been around for 20, you know, we were kind of celebrating our 20th anniversary, and that was getting us a lot of notice. We had this big profile in the New Yorker that came out of, you know, a Rhino, you know, double CD box set thing came out that was, you know, very much like a career retrospective thing. I mean, you know, you only get your, you know, one first 20 years, you know, I don't know how long bands, you know, last anyway. I mean, we're already way past the average life expectancy of a rock band. But, you know, it did seem a little bit like we were watching our tombstone being carved. But at this, you know, at the same time as that, all that stuff was happening, we were working on the No album and doing all this sort of outside work. And it was a very creative time for us. I mean, we really felt like we were kind of rediscovering the essential part of what we were as a band, you know, kind of working outside of the pop music mainstream. You know, I think in some ways our whole career trajectory has kind of come full circle. You know, we really started out as bedroom rockers, you know, and we just had no relationship to the clubs we were playing in or what was the music that was on the radio. We just were so distant from the popular mainstream thing, and, you know, we kind of found an audience, and we started touring and becoming an established thing. And there, you know, there definitely was a moment in the alternative music scene where it seemed like we were just a regular band. There's an upside to that and there's a downside to that. It's, you know, it's exciting and it's, you know, you have a different kind of momentum than you do if you're just, you know, a cult band. But I feel like, you know, we've evolved kind of back into the thing we started out being. I mean, it's all kind of a big upward spiral in some ways. I feel like, you know, we're kind of back in a more experimental mode, and we have an audience that's interested in our strangest impulses. And I mean, something like Here Come the ABCs, you know, it's ostensibly for kids, but as you're saying, you know, it does have an appeal for adults. But as a creative person, I just feel like it's the most interesting thing for us to be involved in. You know, we work with all these great visual artists who bring this whole other thing to it, and that's really it's exciting to write a song that, you know, is going to be animated. That's, you know, for a songwriter, that's like an incredible treat. Just on a personal level, I think, you know, we really feel like we've won the lottery. You know, it's like we get to create stuff that is going to get a very deluxe treatment. And, you know, and we also work with we have a fantastic live band. We worked with musicians who are really, really inspiring and seem to be kind of capable of doing anything. So, you know, we're in a cool spot.
It's funny you say that, because watching and listening to Here Come the ABCs, there definitely were emotional auditory tiebacks to Flood and to some of your early stuff that, you know, there was an element to the music that just flows so freely and is so catchy and smart and, you know, and engaging. So it's I'm a real big fan of the album. I think it's really something, you know, to be able to sit next to your kid and really be connecting with the same music to the same degree.
Well, that's cool. I mean, you know, I never know how realistic that is. You know, I have no idea. I can't imagine listening to a song where the alphabet is being recited and how much it could possibly hold my interest, you know. But you know, I'm pretty much right up against this project, so I have no idea how to take it in.
I don't know, you know, the QU and Fake Believe, and they have that catchy quality that, you know, that Birdhouse in Your Soul had, and, you know, that just, they get in there.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say. I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time writing, you know, putting the tracks together and writing the songs. And, you know, I mean, I think one thing about the kids' stuff, and again, I've said this before, but I think it's very true, is, like, it's as hard to write a good song for kids as it is to write any song for anybody. You know, like, it's not like, oh, you know, it's a kid's song, that'll be easy. It's actually, you know, it's just as big a challenge as anything. So, you know, it's just a different kind of work, and it has its own kind of spark to it that you get to write without any kind of, you know that it's an audience that doesn't have too many preconceived notions.
So what are you guys working on next?
Well, you know, we have done a bunch of material for this movie that Henry Selick is putting together called Coraline, but that's very much in the kind of pre-production stages. He's the guy who directed Nightmare Before Christmas, the Tim Burton produced movie. You know, he's an animator, and Coraline is either going to be CG or stop motion. It's unclear how it's going to be put together right now, but you know, basically they're moving forward on the production, and we're putting together songs for that, and we're working on the next album, you know, in earnest, and we've got a bunch of songs in a bunch of different movies that are coming out, like kind of one-off songs. There's a song that's going to be in a movie that'll be released next summer called A Day for Wilbur Robinson, which is another CG movie. We're doing this cover of this very kind of hilariously over-orchestrated song called Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow that was part of the 64 World's Fair in the Tomorrowland exhibit. And I guess you hear the song when you're at Disneyland, and it's just this very bombastic kind of song. It sounds almost like it's from a Danny Kaye movie from like 1951 or something. It's got this very old-fashioned quality to it. There's all sorts of different one-offs that we've been involved in over the last 6 months, you know, that are all kind of in the works.
How about out on the DVD front?
Well, we're doing putting together visuals for the Venue Songs project, kind of a Best of the Venue Songs thing that has narration, and that'll either be packaged, you know, as a bonus thing with the next rock album, or it will just kind of stand on its own, or it might just be an internet thing. It's kind of hard to know like where that's going to land. It's something that we're basically just doing for ourselves because we enjoyed the songs and felt like it would be cool to give it a bigger treatment. And that's something that we're working with this guy, John Hodgman, who does a lot of stories for This American Life, and he's got this great sort of oratory. I basically put together the script, but in the style of John Hodgman's oratory, and then he punched it up. It's pretty funny. I mean, it's kind of odd because it actually is essentially a comedic entertainment, you know. It's very lighthearted. The Venue Songs are very lighthearted, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's kind of a departure for us. But I also feel like, you know, the way stuff works on the web right now, there's nothing wrong with stretching out and just doing something for laughs. It's not such a big deal, you know. It's kind of a side project thing, but it's cool. It came out really good.
Well, is there a tour at all? Another tour?
We're probably going on tour this fall. Our drummer is, you know, his wife is pregnant. So how realistic it'll be to be actually out when we thought we were going to be out is kind of an open question. But we definitely, you know, want to get back on the road. We're doing a bunch of one-off. We're playing it on the HFS Festival in a couple of weeks, which is a big show. We're sharing the stage with Billy Idol. So that'll be exciting. We're going to get our white wedding thing on. I'm not sure. We're playing in London and in Spain this summer and doing a bit of traveling around. But the big tour probably won't happen till this fall.
And do you think you'll follow up Here Come the ABCs with another kid-oriented album?
Yes, we're gonna do an album called Here Come the Meteors, and it'll be about all sorts of natural disasters. I'm kidding.
You're kidding. See, you can't. I mean, I can see it. I can.
Here come the meteors. Ah! No. We're probably doing like a Here Come the 1-2-3s project sometime, but it won't be until after we do the next rock record. I think it's too confusing for us to do multiple kids things in a row. It makes us wonder what we're doing.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's you know, when we've corresponded, it's been pretty amazing following you around the globe.
Yeah, well, thank you for hanging in there, and you know, tell me how to get this podcast thing going, because if I can hook up this podcast, it'll be my very first. Send me the link, and I'll figure it out.
Will do. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye bye. Thank you for listening to DVD Talk Radio today. Your comments are important to us. You can email them to talk@dvdtalk.com. We also have a listener line you can call in at area code 206-600-6383. Again, thanks for listening today. We will be back again soon with more interviews and talk about DVDs.
You've been listening to DVD Talk Radio. Find DVD Talk Radio online at dvdtalkradio.com.